This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, it's Monday, and we're starting the week off with a bang. We've got an important show to do today. We're going to be talking with Dr. Ian Spreadbury from the Kingston General Hospital about a research paper that he published that has been really the subject of a lot of discussion on various blogs, paleo blogs and so on. You know, we have been talking about ancestral diets now going on over 8 years here on Superhuman Radio. And we've also been talking about gut microbiota ad infinitum. And some of the recent shows that we've done included the Amish gut study, which was really interesting. We talk about the importance of the this microbiota that occupies the inside of our bodies and its effects on health and perhaps even disease. And we're going to continue that discussion today. As we invite Dr. Ian Spreadbury. How are you, Dr. Spreadbury?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. And you?
Very good, very good. First of all, before we start talking about this particular paper, let's talk a little bit about why you're looking at this in the first place.
Well, I mean, for me, it was because I don't actually work looking at either the microbiota specifically or at obesity research. I'm not an independent researcher. I work helping a consultant gastroenterologist run his lab looking at irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, and that kind of thing.
Right.
How I came to be looking at ancestral diet was that moving from the UK to North America, I found my weight began to gradually climb upwards like it does. And I got to the point where I looked in the mirror and thought, oh, my God, no, I've got to do something about that. And it was around about that point that the family doc was referring me to the liver clinic.
Really?
Because, yeah, my...
Your hepatic panels were changing.
My circulating liver enzymes had been elevated for well over a year, and so I was, you know, not in... the best of health, so I thought it's really about time I did something. And it was when I discovered that my favorite Subway sub had over 4 grams of trans fats in it. It was when I realized that I really had to have a look at how I was eating. So I started off like a lot of people. I guess I had a friend who said, oh, you got to do low carb, you got to do low carb. It's all about blood sugar swings. You're on this carbohydrate roller coaster. You've got to do low carb.
Did you dismiss it initially?
Because, you know, when someone says to you, this works for me and you will lose weight without being hungry, if you're as lazy as I am, you listen to that. So I started off low carbing and I dropped from 225 pounds pretty rapidly down to 205. And then low carb being what it is, then it kind of stopped.
Right.
While I still obviously had some excess weight. And I believe during this time my liver enzymes didn't change.
Really?
Which was a bit disappointing. So I suppose, well, I thought, well, I'm not going to stop there. There must be some other trick that I can do. So the next thing I hit upon was I tried cutting out wheat.
Uh-huh.
And I switched the last little slice of bread that I was having each day that made up most of my sub-50-gram carbohydrate
right.
allowance. I switched that out for a rice and potato flour gluten-free slice of bread.
Okay.
And my weight did not move at all.
Okay.
And after about 2 months of it not moving, it was a hockey game, actually. I had a couple of burgers in buns. And nothing seemed to happen.
Right.
So I thought, oh, well, that didn't do anything. The next day, I was absolutely doubled up in pain.
After having the burgers and buns?
Having had, a wheat bun again.
Right.
And I had my first migraine in months and months. And it was a bad one. And I thought, great, now I'm half fat and I can never eat wheat. So the obvious next step from there was you had to take the full plunge, and I went paleo and got rid of that last slice of gluten-free bread and replaced it with fruit and sweet potato and all the others.
Right.
And the weight again spontaneously dropped off, first order exponential decay, down to basically 190.
Wow.
Pounds, I know. Homeostatically guard that, come what may, even if I stuff myself. And apart from a few experiments that I've done with things like honey in various forms or processed meats, that weight has stayed rock solid now for about 2 years.
Wow. That's impressive. But now the important discussion, okay? The paper that you published is a comparison with ancestral diets suggests dense acellular carbohydrates promote an inflammatory microbiota and may be the primary dietary cause of leptin resistance and obesity. It's a very, very long title that basically is implicating a certain type of carbohydrate, which wheat falls into.
Yes.
Explain what an acellular carbohydrate is.
Well, that's what I've highlighted in the title, first and foremost, but I think you could go for any sort of, I think acellular fats and oils are also going to be able to let the bacteria pull this little trick off. I think the carbohydrates, from gauging it by rule of thumb, from looking at how diets affect people, I think they are a more pronounced able to
right.
do this.
Though, well, and also considering the sheer amount that people eat.
Oh, yes, especially these days.
Yeah.
With the flee from the flight from fat.
Right.
And the way processed food's been reformulated. And because it's good for shelf life, too.
Right, right. So what is acellular?
Yeah. It's, if you think about a sweet potato or a carrot or an apple or whatever, even a bit of meat to that extent, when you eat that, what the gut flora of your upper GI tract are going to see is cells, fragments of cells, mm-hmm. complex biomolecules, it's other living things.
Right.
And other living things and bacteria have been coexisting since the year dot, and they've got this play and counterplay game of
right.
behavioral chess going
right.
on.
Right.
When you replace those cellular living foods with a bunch of stuff that's made of either, ground down, constituted, reprocessed sugar molecules, starch molecules, the dead, dried out, and very concentrated stuff that that grains have mm-hmm. put in their endosperms mm-hmm. to try and store energy that's going to be mobilized en masse come germination. It's not, there's virtually no cellular component left in there. It's greatly simplified. It's party time for the bacteria in comparison. It's no longer a life interacting with life situation. The bacteria, what I'm postulating, is that they no longer have to worry about, interacting with other living things and all the evolutionary games that are going on between the two. It's just a nutrient broth now. It's chow time. So what I'm saying is that in this new, more dense, because that makes a lovely graph, so I
right.
put that in the paper, much more simple, no living things watching you, circumstance, the bacteria start to really concentrate on ramping up the genes that they're using for processing energy, for processing carbohydrates, for processing fats and whatnot. And they may also begin to upregulate certain competitive practices that they're using with each other, because bacteria in a complex community like in the gut are releasing things to try and kill off or inhibit their rivals, the other
right.
bacteria. But then here's the crucial bit. Leptin uses a signaling pathway that's the STAT3 pathway that's very similar to a lot of the pathways that's being used by human cytokines, things immune transmitters, interleukin-6 and others. And leptin itself, if you look at the evidence from leptin knockout mice, seems to play a role in inhibiting bacterial proliferation in certain infectious models.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an evolutionary gain for any bacteria that, given a super duper dense nutrient broth, if it can inhibit the host's defense mechanisms in some way to get a better toehold in the host, again, the bacteria could do better and there would be an evolutionary advantage to that. It's a side effect of this STAT3 inhibition that leptin uses the same pathway. What's seen in some of the studies that's still being done by Pauline Lund's group and Helen Raybould's group is that you're seeing this early bacterial-related inflammation in the upper GI tract,
mm-hmm.
not in the colon.
Right, because leptin has actually been implicated in COPD now.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, we did a show on adiponectin levels and asthma, and during that show, the research scientists said, well, we've also found the linkage between leptin dysregulation and COPD, and you see COPD in obese people today.
Because we had a discussion here, me and one of the professors, to the point that what kind of lung dysfunction is seen in catarrhals when they smoke.
Right.
And it's not something that's been looked at in detail, but given the assessment of the health, if there was a presence of obstructive lung, COPD and
right.
other emphysema-like things as a result of the smoking, you think that with all the detailed studies that have been done on them, it would have been mentioned as an aside.
Yeah. No, but, absolutely.
It wouldn't surprise me if that leptin or similar pathways seem to have pretty widespread function.
Yeah.
There's a rat bottle of myocardial infarction where there's a gut bacterial dependent leptin sensitive effect on the size of the infarcts in
really?
The heart attack model. Yeah.
Now that's intriguing. Okay, yeah, we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to start discussing in greater detail the microbiota of the stomach. I've been talking on the show recently. And what I've come to realize is the digestive process is really the immune process. Anytime you put something in your body, a foreign agent, the body has to cope with it, utilize it if it can, and then get it out of the system. And this is just what digestion is. What I want to talk about is the effects of dietary influences on what the microbiota in the body is actually spinning off as a waste product itself. We talk about this becomes very intriguing. We're talking with Dr. Ian Spreadbury. We're talking about his recent paper that has ended up causing quite a lot of discussion about certain carbohydrates and how they may promote inflammatory response through the microbiota of the digestive system. This is going to get even better. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Midst of cutting body fat? Feel exhausted when it's time to train but don't want to use pre-workout drinks because they're loaded with sugar and carbs? Ice V2 is here to help you get intense while carbohydrate depleted. Ice V2 has only 1 gram of non-sugar carbs per serving. Ice V2 is loaded with strength-amplifying anabolic activators that will make your workouts more productive while allowing you to cut the fat. Cut the fat. Loaded with amino acids, Ice V2 contains the unique Formel Norvaline that acts as a pump amplifier. Get Ice V2 today at xfmuscle.com. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
If you want to build muscle and burn fat, if you want to transform your body, your health, and fitness, then your goal should be to get a copy of The Blueprint from Rob Ragish. Learn what the Blueprint Army already knows. There is no faster way to change the way you look and feel than by using The Blueprint. And now, when you order The Blueprint, you will also get absolutely free the Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms in a Single Workout Seminar. That's a $20 value, absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Blueprint banner ad today. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. Kinetic Cream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetic Cream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetic Cream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking to Dr. Ian Spreadbury today from Kingston General Hospital about a comparison between ancestral diets and modern diets, or what we like to call the Western diet. You know, Dr. Spreadbury, I've said numerous times on this show that bread, grain, is an alternative food source in order to feed masses. It's ironic because this weekend we had some children over and we watched the movie Mirror Mirror, which is just a remake of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And Julia Roberts plays the evil witch, and she is oppressing the people, and the people are starving, and she says, "Tell them bread is meat." And, you know, like to placate them, to get them to eat bread and be satisfied with it. And, you know, there's so many food alternatives in our food chain today. But companies work very hard to promote them as a primary source of nutrition. And the reality is, if we look at ancestral diets, if we look at even, the lifestyles of some current primitives, we find out that, The approach to nutrition is animal proteins from animals raised naturally that also have a natural diet, that their diets have not been altered and artificially changed, and vegetation that doesn't require a lot of processing and milling and boiling and preparation in order to eat. With that being said, there seems to be a good gut flora and bad gut flora, correct?
I mean, that's, good and bad is an interesting word. And it's tempting to think that, you know, there are good bacteria and they do good things, and there are bad bacteria and they do bad things. I think that if you look at what changes in the gut when you go between, if you compare lean people and obese people, what's changing in the gut seems to be the changes are more along the lines of the genes that are being expressed by the bacteria.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost the sort of the behavior of the bacteria that's changing. And yeah, if you compare between, you know, different groups and whatever, you'll see huge varieties of different bacteria that are present, but there's a core microbiota of genes that are going on. Now, of course, the whole field's immensely complex, and I'm just looking in as an outsider trying to make sense of it. If you've looked at some of these papers, the typical couple of diagrams that usually get shown to represent the data that they're finding as they do the genetic analyses on what these bacteria are doing look like either an impossibly complex snowflake or a huge field of static of random colors. Mm-hmm. And if you've worked in the field for long enough, these diagrams mean something to you. So, I mean, the way that I've come to think of it is that it's whatever this factor X, and I should get on the record that I don't think it's a simple question of LPS. I don't think it's the lipopolysaccharide from the coat. It's, you know, that can probably influence the degree of infiltration of inflammatory cells into adipose tissue. It can may be able to play a role in hepatic involvement. But I think the main driver of altered energy homeostasis is likely to be something we haven't stumbled upon yet, that is setting out to deliberately inhibit STAT3 via SOX3, the chemical, the signaling molecule that's involved in desensitization of the STAT3 pathway. So I think that that's a behavior, that's a product that may be able to be produced by a number of bacteria, mm-hmm. or it may turn out to only be one. But the bacteria that you see change between a good diet and an obesogenic diet may be just a lot of those changes that are happening are bacteria that really appreciate having a rich nutrient broth, and mm-hmm. so they proliferate more than bacteria that may have required a less competitive or different environment, or they were enjoying eating the fiber more often, or so it's the bacteria that go up may actually just be associated with the problem but not causal.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be interesting to but there, there are individual organisms that people have monocolonized mice with that appear to be part of the problem. So you could look at all the behaviors that are done by those particular organisms, and then you could look at, if you find a commensal that doesn't produce this effect so badly with an obesogenic diet, and then look to see what different, molecules, what the molecular products being generated by the bacteria are, and look for the differentials and come up with some odds of which your target key molecules might be, the ones that are the perpetrators.
But I am under the impression, so I need to be corrected if I'm incorrect about this, but I'm under the impression that the microbiota in the stomach and in the gut throughout the digestive system, it produces a waste product from its helping to break down macronutrients. Is that correct? Am I wrong?
For sure they're producing waste products. And this is where, we start to run up against the limits of my knowledge, too.
Well, and see,
the one that usually gets cited is that the bacteria in the colon, if you give them fiber, they like to break that fiber that you wouldn't have digested otherwise down into short-chain fatty acids. And these are able to be used by the host for nutritional energy, and they can also signal to, there's a group of G-protein coupled receptors, so may also have a signaling role. These are the areas that most of the research is going on at, because when people think about gastrointestinal microbiota, the focus is very much at the moment on the colon, because that's where the overwhelming majority of the bacteria are. What my hypothesis is trying to suggest is that because of the exposure to everything you eat, and not just the non-digestible stuff that winds up in the colon,
right,
the small intestinal bacteria might be more important.
Yes.
And that's backed up by the fact up there you've got the vagal nerves project to up there, whereas they don't to the colon, and so you've got an opportunity to influence the signaling, and you're also, we're seeing in this, the early research where people have looked for where the inflammation in the gut is occurring in diet-induced obesity. It looks like, so far, it's early days, but thus far it's looked like it's going on up in the small intestine and not in the colon.
Is it realistic to attempt to alter the microbiota exclusively from diet, or does it also require the introduction of prebiotic and even probiotic nutrients?
Well, I guess so long as ancestral style diet done properly seems to work on both energy regulation and autoimmune conditions and inflammatory conditions, And I mentioned those two as well because, you know that ancestral diet is reported to have these effects in a lot of people. They see their autoimmunity reduced markedly. They see a great diminution in other inflammatory conditions.
Right, right.
There's research out there that you can't get the carrageenan pore model to work in rodents that don't have gut bacteria.
The carrageenan what model?
Pore model. It's like a standard model of inflammation where they use an extract from, I think it's a moss,
okay.
Carrageenan moss, or a seaweed or some such,
right.
To inflame the pore, and they look at the interaction between inflammatory cells, inflammatory infiltrate, and and it's used to test different analgesics on and whatever. If you have a notobiotic mouse, a mouse without gut bacteria,
right.
Apparently this model doesn't really work anymore.
Uh-huh. And so obviously that means that the bacteria is playing a role in the after effect, if you will.
Yeah, or to be very strict, the bacterial dependent development of the gut, because we know that the notobiotics have different morphology in the fine level of some of the developmental features in the gut. So to be fair, you'd have to say that that's also possible. But for sure, yeah, in broad strokes, what's going on between the gut flora and the gut immune system looks like it has the potential to seriously affect systemic inflammation.
This is exciting because so many diseases are associated with this.
There's a mouse model of remitting relapsing multiple sclerosis.
Mm.
It's a type of encephalitis that these animals
a demyelination, get. Right? The demyelination of the brain?
I think we're talking about the same model, yeah.
Okay.
This model, again, has been reported in a Nature paper, I think end of 2011, that it doesn't seem to develop in notobiotic mice on its own the way that it would normally. So again, there's some preliminary evidence that autoimmunity is working differently if you have a different relationship between the gut flora and the gut-associated lymphatic tissue. So I find this sort of thing, it's early days for sure, but it's very exciting.
Yes.
Because if misbehaving bacteria and STAT3 messing and SOX3 is able to explain perturbed energy homeostasis in Westerners, is it not also possible that some unnatural bacterial behavior that we haven't evolved to cope with may be just predisposing us towards some of these inflammatory conditions?
Yes.
And autoimmunity? And that is a one-stop-shop explanation for why ancestral diet seems to work so well in these areas.
Well, and the funny thing is, there's a regular contributor to the show named Adel Musa. He lives in Munster, Germany, and he's brilliant. And I emailed him about 3 weeks ago and said, I wonder if there's any research of the effects of the microbiota of the stomach on gout. Because gout is really on the rise, in at least here in the United States. And in other countries, I would imagine it's similar, that are adhering to the Western diet. And I said, I just have this suspicion that when the gut bacteria is either given certain fuel, if you will, that what it puts off could be predisposing people to gout, or the lack of a specific bacteria in the stomach that helps to balance out the ammonia production or the uric acid production is missing in these people. Because, the first time I even started thinking about this and how important the gut bacteria is was 7 years ago when I was communicating with a physician in the UK who was treating children on the spectrum with autism spectrum disorder with a probiotic called L-plantarum.
Oh, yes, we work on that a bit here in Kitchener.
and I was like, well, wait a minute. How could the introduction of this gut bacteria help these children? Well, because it helps with carbohydrate metabolism and digestion and allows these wild blood sugar swings that these poor kids go through, which precipitate some of the behavioral problems. to balance out. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. Could this really be? And then when I started digging into this whole gut flora, gut microbiota, it started to dawn on me that what we take for granted as digestion is actually a highly evolved immune system process.
It's certainly a lot of your immune system is down there in contact with all of this that's going on. So it's definitely, there's a large amount of interplay potentially going on. I think the research into the microbiota, of course, mainstream science is hugely excited about it. I'd argue that they haven't yet begun to think about how big it is.
Right. And I think the same thing, because when we think about immunity, right, immune system response, right, like take vaccines, for instance, right, they introduce an attenuated virus, the body develops a resistance to that virus, and now the body can now cope with the introduction of that virus at different times throughout the host's life cycle. Well, what happens when you eat a piece of beef for the first time as a child being weaned? The gut has to become immune to the introduction of this foreign material.
Right,
and this is immune response at its highest level.
It's thought of as oral tolerance.
Yeah.
So if you eat something, the effect of eating, and of course it doesn't always work this way, because obviously people develop food
allergic reactions. Exactly.
But there is, I think that's the principle by which they get people with arthritis to eat chicken collagen.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is that by having chicken collagen in the GI tract, you pick up a measure of tolerance to chicken collagen, and if your collagen in general, if it's cross-reactive, and that's believed to perhaps turn down the response, the assault on.
Well,
there's actually
two schools
joints.
Of thought. There's one school of thought that you just depicted, and the other one is that the body consumes a certain amount of collagen through processes on a day in and day out basis, and by eating that grizzle, as we call it, which was part of the ancestral diet, by the way, you're giving the body sacrificial cartilage, so it doesn't have to go after the cartilage in the joints.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure whether the beast is satiable in that manner. I know that, I can say for what it's worth that in my own limited experience of getting my dad to cut wheat out and to go about three quarters paleo, he's got back a range of motion that in his arthritic arms and stuff that pretty much astonished his specialists.
We have done shows. I'm trying to get this in before the break because I'm being waved at. We have done shows that where people have come on this show who have had rheumatoid arthritis, diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, on rheumatoid arthritis drugs for 16 years, 2.5 hour gel times in order to get out of bed to the bathroom first thing in the morning, who cut grain out of their diet, and
yeah,
inside of a year and a half, even the bulging joints went away.
Yes.
So
yes,
there's no denying this. There's only research that needs to be done now to quantify and qualify it, really.
Yeah, so I quite agree.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your research on some ancestral diets. You looked at a variety of different people, the Maasai, and let's talk a little bit about what you learned there. We're talking with Dr. Ian Spreadbury, from Kingston General Hospital in Kingston, Ontario. This is a really important discussion. For those of you who are still embracing grains, you may want to rethink it. Just because you don't have some of these symptoms doesn't mean you don't have low-level inflammation going on in your body that you just don't need. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Peptide Supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanical Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business visits with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WayNaturalUSA.com. WayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WayNaturalUSA is cold processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only three ingredients in WayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WHEYNaturalUSA.com.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Ian Spreadbury. The subject is going to change just marginally as we start to investigate some of the ancestral diets that he looked at for his research paper. So you looked at quite a few different groups of people, did you not?
And I think the thing that was worthwhile going through that many different ancestral diets was to make the point that, you know, there isn't just one
right
ancestral diet, and the fact that the health benefits that come from this way of eating seem to be pretty much macronutrient independent, and that's an important part of the argument if you're going to, you know, if you're looking at the difference between a Western diet and the way we used to eat. It's very easy to say, you know, one's got a lot of sugar in it, one's got a lot of, you know, very high carbohydrate. It's probably being driven by blood glucose spikes or whatever, and that feeds in through the pathway. So it sort of ends up being almost like some of the insulin theory
right
stuff appears to be. You know, one of the default explanations. And as a result of that, I think the way a lot of people eat paleo, especially in North America, is still quite a low-carb variant because they can't, you know, it's hard to give up on that belief that if you eat a lot of carbs, it's going to put the weight back on. And what looking at that many different people and that many different ways of eating, what I was trying to demonstrate was that it's probably not so much the glycemic index or glycemic load of these diets. It's, are they are they refined? Are they messed about with? Have they been processed? Do they have refined sugars in them? Do they have grains in them?
Clearly the discussion here, the new addition to this discussion is not strictly the hormonal response to foods that creates an environment to produce more body fat, but also the role of the microbiota on that process.
Well, that's it. It's the whole key is not, you know, some trick that's going on in the enzymes where, you know, fat is deciding which pathway is it going to be stored or is it going to be burned or whatever. I think that's yeah, I mean, those things are going on and they're interesting and whatever, but I don't think that's what's driving obesity. To my mind, obesity is a disorder of energy homeostasis.
Uh-huh.
It's the fat thermostat has got a damp tea towel wrapped around it. It's a disorder of hunger and it's a disorder of energy output. And for me, that's based in leptin, and it's based in leptin resistance initially at the vagal afferents. So that's damping your ability to process satiety signals, so that you'll start to eat more that way.
Mm-hmm.
And as the mechanisms your body's using to try and gauge when you need to stop a meal start to malfunction, and you start to put on more adipose tissue, that adipose tissue itself is going to produce more leptin, which eventually will feed back and overcome the leptin resistance. But the other effect that leptin's having is it starts to desensitize its own receptor. So you get this vicious circle where the more you eat, the more a larger body of inflammatory microbiota you might be able to sustain. So you might be able to get worse vagal and systemic leptin resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And as your leptin levels climb, they're going to feed back and further desensitize your own receptor. So theoretically, you might get to a point of obesity where removing the original dietary cause of what they call the bacterial crank that gets this started in the first place, even if you removed that, you would stay at that higher weight because you're producing enough leptin to desensitize your receptors.
Hmm.
And I think this may explain the perception why in people who've been overweight to a greater degree or for longer, and it's more common in women because they have a higher leptin level for any given weight to start with, that they're up at this level where their own leptin levels that they're now producing naturally from their adipose tissue are sufficient to cause central and vagal leptin resistance. And for them, in order to get ancestral diet to work, they may actually have to calorically restrict the old-fashioned way.
On top
at
of...
At least, yeah. To get things moving. And then, but if they're calorically restricting ancestral foods, once they've shed enough adipose tissue that their receptors come out of leptin desensitizing block, for want of a better word, for producing that much leptin, then you would hope that because there's no more dietary cause of the upward crank, they would then be able to eat ad libitum the way those of us who are lucky to only be about 35 pounds overweight and men, the way works for us just by changing diet.
I think the Pima Indian must have been a great example, because you looked at both the Mexican Pima and the Arizona Pima, and the Arizona Pima are well known to be hyperinsulinemic. They develop type 2 diabetes very easily. They're very, very obese. Ironically, the diets did not vary that much in what where they were getting their macronutrients from. It was the amount of macronutrients, right?
I guess it's a question of if you're eating things that are still in the form of a corn tortilla or whatever, which in some cases is less refined. It's been mushed up, and I had some Mexican colleagues who told me that the really authentic tortilla, they haven't even ground the corn first.
Yeah, it's like sand.
Of course, the Arizona Pima are the archetypes for. Here's the full-on Western diet,
right?
And it's tough to imagine something with more of the, by my hypothesis, more of the offending things.
Well, I mean, I just want to make this point before you go on. The Mexican Pima the men that you research, 62% carbohydrate intake, but only 7% obesity, where the Arizona Pima had 49% carbohydrate intake, but 64% obesity.
Yes.
Or so that's counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, well, if you are, you know, thinking carbohydrate theory and blood glucose spikes, but then compare that with the Catawbans, who are eating 70% carbohydrate, a lot of it mashed and mashed and mashed until it's a gloop of organelles. That, you know, they've got a glycemic load high enough that their triglycerides look just like Westerners.
Right.
The lie to that that carbs per se must be the problem.
But does polymorphism polymorphism play any role in this? Because with that discussion,
it's got to determine susceptibility, and we know that if you look at people who, but not in such a way that it's explaining why they have good health. Mm-hmm. If anything, non-Europeans are more susceptible to Western diet. In the case of the Catawbans, we know that if you look across the straits at what's going on the mainland, they have stroke, they have obesity, they have, if Catawbans, the handful that Dr. Lindbergh met them going back to visit the family from the mainland, and they were overweight because they'd been eating Western food, so they hadn't been rendered immune by some genetic propensity.
Right.
I think that it's the how Europeans came to have evolved some restorative ability, some ability to cope a bit better than other peoples with Western diet, is that not only have we been benefiting from cereal agriculture, I say benefiting in terms of city states, armies,
right,
ability to drive everyone else off their land, we had really, really cold winters in Europe, which meant that, you know, if there are other peoples who were benefiting from agriculture, but they were in warmer climates, so there were still other food sources come winter. In throughout medieval Europe, you had your granary and maybe some root veg and maybe some salted meat, but I guess you were proportionally more reliant on the grains that you'd stored, mm-hmm, than you would be in warmer parts of the world. If you have to eat an amount of grains where it actually affects your reproductive viability before you start to evolve a counter to some of this stuff,
right,
it would explain other things that people worry about. You know, I had reviewers reject the paper the first time from one journal saying, well, a paleolithic diet can't work because we now know that people in southern Africa were grinding up wild grasses on a pestle and mortar type scale, on grinding stones. And I think that even if people had been using such grinding stones to, you know, as an additional food source,
right,
unless they were really relying on those wild grasses for substantial bits of the year. Yeah,
right.
I don't think it would have. I mean, what I'm arguing is it wouldn't have affected their reproductive viability well enough that it would have become a driving force for evolution.
Yeah.
So that that's why you don't see a stock, you know, the out of Africa theory. You'd have every human would have inherited,
right,
a decent resistance to this.
I agree.
I should also mention that this works on cats.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, and Dr. Francis Pottinger did a lot of work on cats early on, especially with feeding them raw meat and unpasteurized milk versus cooked meats, which were found in cat foods and pasteurized milk.
Wow.
And the change in their viscera, the color and placement of organs, right down to the homogeneity of their offspring, where the cats that were eating raw foods and raw milk, every kitten looked exactly like the next, as opposed to one mottled one and one large one and one small, you know. It's amazing.
Well, mine is anecdotal evidence from my little guys, just for the difference between, you see a lot of cat foods that say, we're low carb. We're low carb. It's like nature, primal cat food. And it's a dried kibble.
Right.
So what, you know, little carbohydrate or other fats and stuff in it is thoroughly processed.
Right, and dry. It's so dry that by volume, they've been able to say it's low carb. Yeah. But once you rehydrate it, boom.
It's quite an interesting growth medium, one way or the other, potentially.
I
handpicked a cat food that was wet and only had cellular carbs in it, and my guys eat ad libitum, and they've got wastes on them.
Well, and I got to tell you something. We did a show almost a year and a half ago. Actually, we've done two different shows because, you know, so many of us, we want to be healthy and we love our pets. We want our pets to be healthy. We now have a large faction of our audience that feeds both dogs and cats at home raw meats that they go to the butcher and buy the scraps and the bones. And, you know, people will say, oh, well, don't give your dog chicken bones because he'll choke. Yes, if they're cooked. But if a dog in the woods runs down a chicken and eats it, he's not choking on that bone because the bone is a different consistency. Once it's cooked, it splinters. We have to take a break, Dr. Spreadbury. I've got more questions when we come back. The conversation is going to continue on with Dr. Ian Spreadbury. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. WhayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WhayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only 3 ingredients in WhayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back.
It was a moonlit night.
We're talking with Dr. Ian Spreadbury. Dr. Spreadbury, I tend to be a very simplistic type of a person. I am not degreed or accredited in any way, shape, or form to make any kind of judgments about science. But what I do rely on is critical thinking skills. And with that being said, I'm coming to the conclusion that the microbiota of the digestive system is actually a microcosm of the world. And what I mean by that is we have discovered that when animals are fed unnatural artificial diets, the byproducts, both in the health of the animal and what their waste is, their waste product is, tends to change dramatically. A case in point is we know that cows who are allowed to eat exclusively grass, like they were genetically predisposed to do, do not produce the type of E. coli that has been implicated in all the widespread foodborne illness outbreak here in the United States. This is exclusively an E. coli that's formed in the gut of cows that eat corn, grain, and soy, which are commercially grown. So, you know, with that being said, I have this suspicion. We talk on this show about eating a natural diet and the importance to our body. I have a feeling that the microbiota is the same way. And when we feed the microbiota foods that are food substitutes that we were not genetically predisposed to eat, or in worst cases, now the new genetically modified variants that we don't even know what they are changing in the process, the waste product of the microbiota becomes a toxic agent that then enters the bloodstream, and then the immune system has to eradicate it somehow, which we see in these autoimmune disorders.
Or not so much that it's a waste product. It's as likely that this is deliberate. You know, by messing with STAT3 signaling, the particular bacteria that are doing that are probably doing it because there's an evolutionary benefit to stopping the host's cytokine signaling, including leptin, coming back to try and modulate bacteria numbers. So it's, you know, all the way through infectious diseases and viruses and bacteria, there's lots and lots of evidence that, I mean, I think hepatitis B, the virus, makes a couple of products that go back and try and modulate different things about the host's resistance to viral replication.
Huh.
It's just evolution. It's part of the chess game that bacteria play with their hosts, and they play with each other.
Right.
But for sure, yeah, it's there's going to be other toxic waste products potentially coming out of doing an experiment, giving bacteria that have lived within us during our co-evolution an unprecedentedly rich and not fighting back source of food.
What do you think? What do you think about the genetically modified variants, like the gliadin in wheat? Now is coming to the forefront.
Yeah, the problem with starting to play GM with food is it is a bit Pandora's box.
Yeah,
and then your second problem with that is, it's all becoming so widespread so quickly that, say it did have some unexpected health effect, that effect would appear throughout the population. And after a couple of years, the question would be, well, who's your control group that you would compare it with to figure out what was causing the disease?
Right.
And, you know, we're looking at a similar thing with Western diet in itself, that it's now so ubiquitous that to find people who don't eat grains and sugar to actually point out, hey, you remember that so much of medicine has forgotten that these diseases are optional.
Right.
That they're not the intrinsic human condition.
Right.
And that's really news. When you tell that to MDs today, they really had forgotten it. That's not taught to people in med school now.
No. No, I know health is health today, optimal health is optional. Diseases is an absolute. And I have these discussions with friends, and we talk about it on the show. You know, if you ask the average person, do you think that you will get a disease in your lifetime that will take your life? They will say yes.
Mm-hmm.
When the appropriate way to die is, you know, the heart runs out of gas and you die in your sleep.
Or infectious disease.
Well, we've captured...
The immune system doesn't replicate fast enough, and it takes you down in old age.
Yes, yes, I agree. Talk to me about your liver. So what did you find when you finally cut the last bit of grain out? Did the liver panels change?
Oh, I'm absolutely normal now. Yeah, they said, get out of our liver clinic. We have no concerns about your liver.
tell me about your diet. So how do you eat? What is your version of paleo?
Oh, I eat macronutrients on a sort of meat and two veg kind of ratio.
Good.
Just because it comes naturally. I don't worry about getting in the grass-fed meat and everything because I'd have to walk too far to find it. It would be a bit expensive. I don't eat any seed oils just because I think any refined oils might be part of the problem. I think that's partly why low-carbing only works so well.
Mm-hmm.
I avoid all flour. I do not eat anything, even processed meat, that has any refined sugars in it at all, even a tiny bit, because I've demonstrated to myself there's something in Italian breakfast sausages that within 2 weeks it switches off the benefits of paleo.
Oh.
So I don't touch it anymore. I don't use honey as a sweetener because when diluted again within 2 weeks I'm in trouble.
See, and you said that about honey. I was going to ask
you
about
that. Yeah, I did an experiment though, spooning the honey straight into my mouth, and that took 2 months to have similar effects, which when you consider that honey in its undiluted form is not readily broken down by bacteria, but for osmotic reasons and because it produces peroxides, I think, in aerobic environments anyway. So it's got it doesn't go off in its undiluted form.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, you can't prove anything from an N of one, but yeah, at least
no.
It didn't. I wasn't left scratching my head going, well, how do I explain that then?
Right, right. Know. What about dairy? What's your stance on dairy?
I really, really like cheese, but I try not to eat it. I don't drink milk.
Have you any experience with raw unpasteurized milk?
No, I haven't. I read that that's a sort of popular thing, trying to get that past the police at the border and stuff.
Yeah, I know, especially up there. It's different. Raw unpasteurized milk is the way milk was supposed to be.
Yes.
Provided, but unfortunately, you know, once again, it's the same old thing.
I was kind of agnostic on dairy, and then I had some correspondence with excellent dermatologist who used to actually work up at Queen's, and he was now down in the US, and he said, have a look at these then here, and he put these papers my way. And I looked at them, and you can see that the dairy's got stuff in it that's pretty nicely activating mTORC pathways and getting keratinocytes to divide in culture, and you look at it and think, you absolutely can't rule out that this is behind, you know, some worsening perhaps of heart disease or something.
Right.
And when you start thinking about it like that, and the fact that, yeah, as soon as you eat cheese, you do break out in spots pretty rapidly.
Right.
You know, I do. Yeah. So, you know, it's there visible evidence that it's activating some cell division pathways and stuff. So I thought, yeah, I ought to be sensible.
Yeah.
So
I'm a polyphasic dairy and the wintertime I stop buying raw milk from my farm. I have a Mennonite farmer that I buy raw and pasteurized milk and butter, raw butter, and I generally, as a rule, drink it from spring through summer, and then I've been doing it this way so long that I just lose the taste for it as the weather gets cold. And the reason I started doing that was because another physician from Canada, Dr. Mauro Di Pasquale, who was talking about ancestral diets for anabolic and sports reasons 25 mm-hmm. years ago, he was the one who said, look, you know, we didn't have vegetation in the wintertime. We didn't milk. The cows needed all their energy in the winter just to stay alive. They weren't mm-hmm. producing milk, so we didn't drink milk in the wintertime. He goes, you know, and we are descendants of a polyphasic diet where we had access mm-hmm. to things and we didn't have access to things. And this artificial strawberries in the wintertime and everything all the time, all year long, is not necessarily a great thing for the human condition. It made me start thinking about it. And so I tend to use raw unpasteurized dairy for about 3 to 4 months out of the year, and then I just kind of phase it out again.
Mm.
And I find that works for me. And I love, I will say it, and it's like drinking pus, I know, but I love first and second day colostrum, which my farmer will sell me a gallon at a time to time. Looks like eggnog, very, very fatty, but oh my God, I thrive on that stuff. I love it. So anyway, okay. The last thing that I wanted to ask you was you have some speaking engagements coming up. You're going to be in Scandinavia in April, right?
That's right, yeah. I've been very kindly invited over to Norway by, I think the name is Kostreform. They're a non-profit that are having a convention and trying to get the Norwegian authorities to have a look again at dietary regulations, dietary advice, as I understand it. So they very kindly asked me to go over, which, you know, when somebody says, hey, would you like to come to Norway?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very pleased to be going over there. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, is that something that the public can attend?
Oh, no, you know, I wish I knew enough to tell you.
Yeah.
But they've got a website, Kostreform. It starts with a K. It's in Norwegian, so you'd have to make use of Google Translate.
What do you hope that both clinicians and lay people take away from your research?
From my research, I hope that clinicians and scientists realize that there is a potential underlying theory that ties all this together and that it could make sense. I hope they take ancestral diet and the benefits of getting the grains and sugar out of diet very seriously indeed, and you know, whether or not my ideas about it are right or not, that doesn't matter. What matters is that this way of eating that seems to work exponentially better than anything else we've got as an intervention for the problems that are wrecking people's lives and are costing us more money than we can afford.
Right.
The powers that be have got to take it seriously as a matter of urgency and look into it. Whatever testing they want to do to get it, to know exactly how effective it is in different conditions and to know how safe it is, do it. But for goodness sake, please do it soon, because there's a lot of people suffering out there and the current dietary advice is just really pants.
You know, I have no faith in governments, only because politicians are human beings just like the rest of us. They have the ability to be both honest or corrupt. So I'm not simply saying that, but what I am saying is this. Big business and commerce is too far entwined or intertwined with government.
And look at who's sitting at the table.
That's it.
They determine the dietary guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have companies like Monsanto that have incestuous relationships with the Food and Drug Administration here in the United States. They have billions of dollars at risk by this new paradigm of nutrition. And really, it's not a new paradigm of nutrition. It's actually a return to the old paradigm of nutrition, because the new one didn't work clearly. But you have billions and billions, maybe trillions of dollars at risk. So the only way, in my humble opinion, for this to work is to continue to have these discussions, which we have over and over again, so that more and more people come into the fold. And more people try eating this way, and more and more people see the benefits and change. To coin the term of the late Michael Jackson, you know, start with the man in the mirror. I don't think you're ever going to see the government come out and say, "Look, we realize now that the grain is really causing problems," because our government here in the United States, that's the top subsidized crop in the world, in the United States. Do you think they're gonna just cut their own profits
sooner
down?
Or later, though, if you look at where the economics on the healthcare goes, they're talking about healthcare spending expanding to the point where it eats all, you know, sweeps all other non-discretionary spending off the table.
Right.
So, sooner or later, it is in their self-interest to do something about it, because it's going to bankrupt.
Here's why I have to disagree with you, you know, respectfully and humbly disagree. Our government here in the United States is now taking the position, as I predicted, if somebody goes back to a show that I did back in 2006, I said our government wants to be a healthcare insurance provider. Because there is big business. That's big business health insurance, okay? Mm-hmm. And we are doing it now. This government is taking a position not just to be Medicare, Medicaid, but to be able to collect dollars and be in the business of healthcare insurance from the payer standpoint, which means that they will be able to get those monies from people on a month-in, month-out basis. I say this with all candor. People will pay to stay alive. Anything. Their entire income, they will pay to stay alive.
Yeah.
So there is actually there is actually a benefit to the government, if the government is in the business of providing health care, to actually having a population that is on the borderline of being sick all the time and needs to depend on this system. Because now what you have is you have a community of people, a population of people who will work, and their money and their toil will go to these things that which will keep them alive. And if the government is in the middle of that mix, they're actually profiting from this parasitic relationship. There is no vested interest in them for them to say, you know, this is not good for you. It's good for government to be able to be in that position, and our government has taken that position now. And everybody's extolling, oh, well, this government is so great, you know, healthcare. People don't have to be sick in the first place.
Yeah, that much is true. There's another group that it would be that I'm trying to win over by persuading as many of them as possible to eat this way. Because I've noticed that the only people who really believe in the benefits of paleo and ancestral diet are the ones who were sick and tried it. And then you have, you know, someone who's seen for themselves that it actually works. And so I've just had, we just got invited to write a cardiovascular risk review.
Right.
Based on the hypothesis, and that's out at the moment, although it's not quite, it hasn't been PubMed listed yet, but it will be soon. And in that, we're trying to get, we make the point in the discussion that unusually for a lifestyle intervention, this one's going to have effects big enough for you to check out on yourself if you're curious.
Right.
And we refer the reader to a table with a sort of example, grain-free cellular diet.
So, right.
Hopefully, you know, the more, if you can get someone who's towards the top in the world of medicine or dietitioning or policy maker or even an overweight politician and get them to eat paleo so they can see the benefits for real. That's the sort of thing that when one of these people comes out and says, you know, hey, look at this, that the media report it more, and then you see more people again would hear about it by word of mouth. So it would be great to get some sort of word of mouth going within medicine and within politics that this is the answer.
Well, we have a lot of doctors that are now getting wise, and I have to be honest with you. I rail against the medical orthodoxy, but that's because it still hasn't made enough of a shift in the right direction, in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of good doctors out there now understand the value of nutrition. They're looking at the paleo diet. They're looking at hormone replacement therapies. They're looking at things that their staunch, toe-the-line counterparts have not looked at and will not look at.
Yeah. And you can see it moving, can't
yes,
you?
I saw yes.
There was a dietitian commented on when the Consumer Report people said that paleo was the most effective.
Yeah.
Put it at the top of its table. And the dietitian commented, normally you'd get a dietitian come out and say, oh, you shouldn't stop eating grains.
Yeah.
They're very nutritious. This one just came out and said, you know, I'm not sure whether there's a benefit in cutting out dairy or not. And I thought, that's a really considered view for a dietitian.
Right.
That's quite encouraging.
Right. No, and they are. But you know what? That's because they want to stay alive. They want their children to stay alive. They want their family to be healthy. So they have to.
Yes,
you gotta sleep. You gotta stop drinking the Kool-Aid eventually.
Sooner
you have
later.
To stop.
Yeah.
One last thing I want to say as we close the interview. In 2008, I believe it was, the United States government paid the National Intelligence Council Global Trends for 2025 to identify the six technologies with the potential to impact the United States. They're called disruptive civil technologies. And these technologies had to fall into one of, I think, four classes. And they were military, financial, geopolitical, socioeconomic, and so on. That have the potential to disrupt the United States. And do you know what the number one disruptive technology that the National Intelligence Council on Global Trends came up with for the United States?
No, I'm scratching my head.
Biogeron technology, the science of living longer. It posed a greater threat to the United States than energy storage materials and biofuels and bio-based chemicals, clean coal technologies, service robotics, the Internet of Things. All of those things were dwarfed by the government's concern. And I say concern, there are those who say, no, we're not concerned, it's a good thing. But I don't believe that they really believe that. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, because there's no advantage to the government for Americans to live longer because of what happens at death, the transference of wealth. There's just so many important things. Plus, they can't afford to pay Social Security much longer. They can't have people living to be 115. And so the number one disruptive technology is biogeron technology, the science of living longer. Now, that should say something. When we try to consider that, well, maybe government is altruistic and there's a politician who'll eat paleo. And because the government operates from something called the greater good. And that means that if the greater good is served, people must suffer, people must die, people must get sick. The problem is that the government makes the decision on what is the greater good. The people never make that decision.
Mm. So. Well, I think I'm not expecting eating this way to have me live any appreciable period longer. I'm just hoping to get there in up until the last couple of weeks in a lot better shape than I would have been. Well, I was already in a bad enough shape.
Right.
So yeah, it's to have a quality life, not necessarily a longer one. I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Right. But unfortunately, there is a lot of research out of Canada. We've done shows from a physician from the University of Guelph, who showed that it is glucose signaling that sparks cellular senescence. And then you have people like Cynthia Kenyon out of the University of San Francisco, who went on a crusade to dispel the notion that nutrition can affect longevity, and she actually proved it. Again, because and that's through ancestral diet. So while you may not want to your goal is not to live longer, unfortunately, I may say to you with complete confidence that I'm sorry to tell you, but you're gonna.
So, we'll see. Yeah. I'm not gonna argue with it when it happens.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to bet against your own life. Come on. Listen, really. Dr. Spreadbury, it's really been great having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yes, pleasure. Take care of yourself.
Fun. You too.
Okay. All right, stay tuned. We're gonna take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscle muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
We original who?
Welcome back. You know, the microbiota in the stomach continues to be very intriguing to me. And what we can do to promote healthy microbiota is really going to be the subject of a lot of discussions as we move forward. And I have some ideas on it that I'm hoping that we can get some guests to come on and talk about, because back, I want to say about 3 or 4 years ago when we did our first show on lectins, Crispin Sullivan came on, and at the very end of that interview, she said something that was really intriguing. She said, the people who live the longest have two interesting characteristics. Number one, they have healthy functioning thyroids. And number two, they have the most diverse gut bacteria of majority of people out there. Those are the two things that they saw in people who are 80, 90, 100 years old and thriving. Now, don't think it's exclusively diet, because it's also sleep related. We know that the gut bacteria does its pruning, if you will, at night when we sleep. So those who have impaired sleep, they have the double whammy. They're going to have the hardest time getting their gut flora corrected. But we're going to be discussing this more and more as we go on, because it really is an important discussion. And unfortunately, we all, me included, have to do things to enhance our gut flora, which may include the elimination of certain foods and other things like chemicals, like coffee. You know, there's a lot of things out there that assault the digestive flora that it was never designed to handle. So there's going to be a lot of hard decisions that need to be made as we move forward through this discussion. But I can tell you that it's a worthy discussion, because I have a funny feeling that anything that enhances longevity also improves performance. So those out there who are saying, well, I'm young, I just want to lift heavier, I want to be faster. Guess what? I have a good feeling about this. That anything that improves the gut flora, the immune digestive response, is going to also affect performance, maybe through recovery, maybe through brain chemistry. We have another guest coming on very shortly this week, also talking about gut flora and its linkage to certain autoimmune disorders. Just to continue that discussion for those who aren't convinced already. So keep this in the back of your mind. Take care of your stomach. Do things that enhance the health of the flora in the stomach. Choose the right foods. There's supplements that work. Get enough sleep. Do the things that will help you be stronger and live longer. That is the message of the show. Okay, thanks for listening to Supreme Radio. We have great shows planned for the rest of the week. We'll talk to you later.
that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.